When you find yourself in deep trouble, you know, when the rubber hits the fan, it really doesn't matter whose fault it was. When you find yourself broke or bruised or beaten up, you're not desperate for a therapist to find out, you know, why you're in a bad place today. If you're depressed or you are distressed, it's not that important to understand the causes. All you really want is someone to help you, someone to understand, someone to show you care, they care, someone to hold your hand. You see, hurt people, broken people, used and abused people, dying people don't need theological explanations. They don't need self-help tutorials. They need practical help. Not next month, not next week, but now, today, this minute. In our series of encounters between Jesus and women, today we meet a mother, a desperate mother, a mother with a sick child. Imagine you've carried this baby in your womb for 9 long months. You've been through every excruciating pain possible in childbirth. You've nursed this child. You've fed them. You've washed them. You've changed them. You've watched them grow, take their first step, first word. You can remember their first day at school. You can remember the first day you let them out of your sight. She is your little girl. Your little girl. And this was her little girl. Maybe she'd been sick before. Maybe a cold here, a headache there. Maybe even the flu time to time, but nothing like this ever before. In the daytime, she would scream, shout constantly. You wouldn't be able to put her clothes on her. She'd tear them off. Her hair was no longer washed, no longer tidy with those sweet little pigtails. It was pulled out at the roots. The remaining ones were left sticking up. Strange voices would come out of her mouth. She wouldn't eat, couldn't sleep, couldn't play. But the one thing that was constant were her eyes. A strange look in her eyes. Eyes that could tell you this was no ordinary sickness. No ordinary problem. No ordinary trouble. She was, and it took you a long while to figure it out, and you don't even want to use the word, possessed. Can you imagine how helpless this mother feels? I'm losing my own little girl. I'm losing my little girl. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. Maybe you know what it feels like to lose your little girl or your little boy or to lose your husband or lose your wife or lose your brother or your sister or your mother or your father. And it really doesn't matter whether it was cancer, chronic illness, old age, drugs, alcohol, gambling, work, or infidelity. It really doesn't matter because the feeling is exactly the same. It's that desperate, hopeless, helpless feeling. So maybe you can identify and empathize with this mother. And if you are a mother, you know how strong your love is for your child. You'll go miles in search of food or medicine. You'll travel through the night, on foot, in the cold, in the rain, whatever your child needs. And I'm sure this mother will have been to the doctors. She'd have sought their skills, but they couldn't help her. Maybe she'd gone to the priest and he'd sprinkled holy water on her, anointed her with oil. But he couldn't help her either. She was out of money, out of options, without hope. And then news comes about a man, a very special man. Jesus is his name. And delivering helpless people is his speciality. Good news like that travels fast, doesn't it? Far and wide. Verse 22 tells us she was so desperate, she had to meet him. If you're sick, you go for a doctor. If you've got a legal problem, you find a lawyer. If you've got a family problem, you might use a therapist, a counselor. If you've got trouble at school, you need a tutor. If you've got a problem with your pipes, you need a plumber. But if your problem is demon possession, you need a demon chaser, a yoke breaker. You need Jesus. This morning we're thinking about the woman who would not give up. And I've got three questions for you. And my first question is this. Are you desperate enough to seek the help of God? Are you desperate enough to seek the help of God? Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and a Canaanite woman from the vicinity came to him, crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly." In the original language, the word suggests that she was not only crying out, but she kept crying out. She didn't do it once. She kept crying out because she wanted his attention. She wanted his complete, undivided attention. She's desperate to save her daughter. "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me." Now, I wonder if you've got the point. Have you got to that point of desperation? Are you out of human options yet? Have you realized that you can't change your behavior through education? Have you realized you cannot rationalize your past through therapy? You cannot atone for your sin through penance or buy it with money? You won't find peace of mind through the next bestseller book or the next conference. First question, like this mother, are you desperate enough to seek the help of God? Second question, are you determined enough to do the will of God? Are you determined enough to do the will of God? Verse 23, Jesus did not answer a word. So his disciples came to him and said, urged him, "Send her away, for she keeps crying out after us." Jesus answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." The woman came and knelt before him. "Lord, help me," she said. He replied, "It's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." To her shock, maybe yours too, to her shock and surprise, Jesus ignores her. Verse 23, we find Jesus doing exactly the opposite to what we think he should. He doesn't rush to her aid. He doesn't agree to follow her home. He doesn't even soothe her heart with words of encouragement. He remains silent. The silence of Jesus. The silence of Jesus. Jesus did not answer a word. Now, what was Jesus doing? Was he training his disciples? Was he showing them how heartless and insensitive the Jewish leaders were, the way they treated the Gentiles? Well, that may be true, but I don't believe it was his main concern. His primary focus is, in fact, this woman. But not yet. She'd heard that Jesus could do anything, but when she came for help, he was silent. I wonder whether you can empathize with her. A lady told me last Sunday in the afternoon that she pleaded with God over and over and over again, and she got no answer. She wanted to know from me if he was playing with her. The silence of God is difficult to cope with when you're desperate. You know, I really wish I could go through life, you know, with God speaking to me moment by moment, audibly, you know, where to go, what to do, who to see. We all wish our prayers could be answered right away immediately. But the truth is, sometimes God says yes, sometimes God says no, but often God says, wait. When God is silent, do you give up praying? Do you give up asking God for direction? Do you give up on that lost person you're praying for? Do you give up and walk away and think, well, wasting my time? How do you deal with the silence of God? Have you been there yet? You know, you may fast. You may pray through the night. You come to the prayer meeting, you get to church early, you go for prayer after the service, but God still remains silent. All the things the books on prayer tell you to do don't work. Do you stop praying? Verse 23 says this Canaanite woman, this pagan, kept crying out. She was persistent. She knew that if he didn't answer her, there wasn't going to be an answer. She knew that Jesus, if he can't do it, nobody can do it. So she keeps on. And that's the lesson we need to learn. To pray, Lord, I know that only you can help me. Only you can heal me. Only you can forgive me. Because it's so easy to think, I'll use a prayer formula. If it doesn't work, I'll try something else. I'll give God a chance. If it doesn't work, it's my turn. I'll call on God now, and if that doesn't work, I'll call my cousin. I'll call God before or after I try my other solutions. And somehow, God is trying to let us know he isn't another solution. He isn't another helper. He isn't another problem solver. He is the only solution. He is the only help, the only problem solver. So like this woman, we need to keep on crying until we get an answer. He may not change the situation, but he'll help us to bear it. God is looking for saints who will be like Jacob, who said, I won't let you go until you bless me. I won't stop crying until you answer. Because the truth is, if God can't do it, it can't be done. So we need to learn to close the blinds, shut the door, turn off the phone, stop trawling the internet, ignore the emails, and cry out to the Lord. James 5:16 says, the prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. This is how we cope with the silence of Jesus. But there's more. Because after this woman had been appealing to Jesus for a period of time, and he wasn't prepared to say anything, she began to get on the disciples' nerves. So they turned to Jesus and give him some advice. Because she not only had to handle the silence of Jesus, she had to handle the rebuke of the disciples. His disciples came to him and urged him, send her away, for she keeps crying out after us. Now, follow me in this. If they were asking Jesus to send her away, they'd obviously got to the point of, cut it. They couldn't cope with her persistence. And they took it personally. She's crying out after us. Well, no, she wasn't. She was crying after Jesus. But they felt helpless too. And that's exactly what Jesus wanted them to be as well, because this wasn't a learning opportunity. They say, if you're going somewhere, take someone with you, so you can both learn. Now, the reality is, in your walk with God, there will be times when you not only have to cope with the silence of God, but you'll also have to cope with the misguided advice from his followers. You know, well-meaning, thoughtful, caring, sincere, but wrong. The fact is, even Christian friends will lose patience with you. And they may even suggest in ever so spiritual, subtle language that maybe it's your fault that your prayers are not being answered. Maybe there's unconfessed sin. And through believers, Satan will tell you to give up. Give up. Look for another career. Give up asking the Lord for that baby. Give up. Your child will never come back to the Lord. Give up. Your marriage will never improve. What the disciples were really saying to her is, you know, we can't cope with you. Just go away. And that's why we use this expression in church circles, EGR, extra grace required. You know, certain people are EGR people. They need extra grace as required. What that means is, just when you want to give up, remember that they need more grace. Why? Because you need more grace. Because sooner or later, we all are EGRs. We all need extra grace. This woman, like so many today, not only had to cope with the silence of Jesus, but the rebuke of his disciples. And then thirdly, there is the testing of faith. Jesus answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." And the woman came, knelt before him. "Lord, help me," she said. And he replied, "It's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." It's just one of those passages preachers usually avoid preaching on, you know. First, Jesus ignores her. Then she endures the rebuke of the disciples. And then when finally Jesus does speak, he says, "I haven't been sent to your kind. There are more important people for me to deal with right now." Now, it's hard when you feel like God is being silent on you, but worse that you feel like you're second class or you are unspiritual and therefore, you know, he's got better people to look after. You know, you can't find a job, your kids won't behave, there's no peace at home, bills are unpaid, credit is shot, car is costing you a bomb, your hair is falling out. Has God really rejected you? Well, I have news for you. No, he hasn't. It's a test. It's a test. Verse 25, the woman came and knelt before him. "Lord, help me." She's not crying out now. She has his attention. Even if she doesn't get the reply she's hoping for, she's not giving up. Despite the apathy, or apparent apathy, rejection, she kneels before him and calls him Lord. Lord. She throws herself before him and she worships him. My question is, can you worship God when everything is falling apart? Not only when there's silence from heaven, but when you do get the answer, it's not the right one. Jesus answered her, "It is not good to take the children's bread and cast it to the dogs." Was Jesus calling this woman a dog? Her daughter is demon-possessed, and he seems to label her a dog. Now, today we call the dog a man's best friend. But back in Jesus' day, dogs were not largely domesticated. They were scavengers like rats, big rats. They were annoying, barking, howling, kept you awake at night. They hang around the rubbish dumps in packs. They were disgusting. They'd eat almost anything. They ate the garbage. They would tear into rotten carcasses of dead animals. They were scavengers. And the worst part was sometimes they went back and ate their own vomit. Humour me for a moment. If Jesus was actually calling this woman that kind of dog, do you have a problem with that? If Jesus calls us that kind of dog, do we have a problem? Well, I want to suggest that if Jesus did, he has every right to do so. Sin makes us all act like dogs. We feed our minds with things that we shouldn't. We look at all sorts of detestable things on telly or the video. We listen to suggestive music and songs. We look on the internet at questionable things. And worse than that, sometimes when God delivers us from sin, we go crawling back like dogs to our own vomit. You know, he delivers us from gossiping, but we gossip. He gives us power over lying, but we tell half-truths. So, I don't know about you, and I don't want to embarrass you, but I have no problem if Jesus wants to call me a stray dog. But the good news is that in the original language, Jesus doesn't call her a stray dog, even though he had every right to do so. He uses a different word. Jesus describes her like the domesticated household dog, the pet. And here we begin to understand why Jesus is treating her in this way. The question is whether, like this mother, you are so desperate that you'll seek the help of God, whether you are determined enough to do the will of God. And my third question is, are you depending entirely on the grace of God? This woman clearly is. See her reply to Jesus' statement. "Yes, it is, Lord." She contradicts Jesus. "Yes, it is, Lord. Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from her master's table." Then Jesus said to her, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted," and her daughter was healed that moment. You see, the Pharisees called Gentiles dogs all the time, but not this kind of dog. They were always stray dogs, but never pet dogs. But Jesus calls her the pet dog. Now the question is this: how does that kind of dog get into the house? Who lets the dog in? Who lets the dogs in? You see, nobody owns a stray dog. They're on their own. They fend for themselves. They don't know where the next meal is coming from, and so they are ruthless. But not the pet dog. The pet dog has a master who feeds it and shelters it. That's why she challenges Jesus. "Yes, it is, Lord," she says. "Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Their master's table. The Lord is saying, if you call me a pet dog, Jesus, I'm okay with that. I have no problem with that. But if I'm your pet dog, then you are my master. And if you are my master, you're my daughter's master as well. So please help me. Do you see that? Crumbs are the remnants of a meal. Crumbs are what you wipe off your mouth and your plate. But if we are so desperate for Jesus, we'll take the crumbs. "That's all I need, Jesus," she's saying. The crumbs. Because she recognizes he's no ordinary man, no ordinary prophet, no ordinary healer. He could do whatever he wanted, wherever he wanted, to whom he wanted, whenever he wanted. So if I'm your pet dog, then please feed me. Please heal my little girl. You know, his crumbs are better than anyone else's dinner. And so she says, "Lord, just your crumbs alone will satisfy me. Just a little morsel from your hand will give me more than I ever need. Just a little touch from you, Lord, will make my daughter whole. Just a word from you will soothe her soul. Just a little move of your spirit can change my life. Just your crumbs, Lord. That's all I want." Doesn't say it, but I think Jesus is smiling at this point. No wonder Jesus responds, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." And her daughter was healed at that moment. At that moment. Jesus did answer the woman's prayer. But it took a journey to get there. Can you imagine the scene when the mother gets home to find her daughter delivered? When did it happen? And she realizes, "Praise my soul, the King of heaven. To his feet thy tribute bring, ransomed, healed, restored, forgiven, evermore his praises sing." But now he doesn't call us stray dogs. He doesn't even call us house dogs. He calls us sons and daughters, co-heirs with Christ. But the only question is, like the woman, are you desperate enough to seek the help of God? Are you determined enough to do the will of God? And are you depending entirely on the grace of God?